to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen. Mr. Matt Weber, S&P futures down 17, NASDAQ down 45, down on 143 as we're heading the other way from the rally yesterday. Do we have Mr. Lou with us?
I'm here. Good morning.
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing okay. We just shoveled about 2 inches of snow off the driveway here in Denver yesterday.
Jesus.
Tuesday. I don't want to talk about the weather because we're going to sound like a couple of old guys, but it was 100 degrees here on Sunday, and then 93 or something like that, or 91 on Monday, and then Tuesday morning it was in the 30s, and we had snow. So that's the kind of weather change it's been here. I don't know if you guys are going to see any of this, but it was bizarre.
Oh, my God.
They could use a little of that in California.
Yeah, well, we had a huge fire burning up north of, or up in the vicinity of Rocky Mountain National Park, and it got 14 inches of snow. So that the thought process is that should have, we hope, damped it down sufficiently that they can get it under control because it's been pretty dry up there. But to have a temperature swing of like 60 degrees. In the space of 24 hours, it is something I've personally never experienced. 50 degree swings, you know, rarely, but I've never seen one almost 60 degrees like this. And that was it. I mean, everybody's kind of going, "What just happened here?"
Well, I think we've had some 40-ish's here.
I don't know about you guys. We've had 70 or we've had 75 days over 90 here this summer. That's a lot.
It's been the Southwest has been.
We've had a great
really,
summer.
Yeah, we've had a really good summer.
Where it's been in the upper 70s, low 80s almost every day, and then this week it's cooled off a little bit into the mid 60s. But it's been great.
Yeah, it's been a very hot summer here. We had a lot of moisture in the spring, and then it's actually up at my house. It's in the mountains. It's actually quite green. We're seeing wildflowers that we haven't seen in years coming up, but. August has just been a very, very hot, dry month, and then to cap it off in September with a snowstorm. I think we set records for the earliest freeze in Denver, and because it actually went below freezing on Tuesday. So I mean it was really weird.
Well, we've had a couple of days here, I know, and. We've been in the wintertime where it's been 50, and 2 days later it's 5 below. I mean, we've had that a couple of times, easy. But not so much this time of the year below 30. These guys in California and in Arizona, I mean, if you would have had that piece of news of how hot the August was going to be, you could have made a real lot of money on natural gas futures, boy. And they were down absolutely on their ass, and really almost a whole, I'm going to say 60 cents on and a lot of the, I call them reactors, or not reactors, the ones that are, you can turn on in the afternoon real fast, or they're gas-fired, electrical, utility outlets, correct? They're all gas-fired, natural gas-fired. So they had to use a lot, they were on almost constantly, and they're supposed to be the emergency ones, right? And,
unless you live in California, and then it doesn't matter what you do. You can't get enough electricity.
Well, they've been reasonably all right with this until the couple of days it was, the highest temperature ever recorded was 130 in Death Valley or something.
Yeah, well, they were having rolling blackouts starting a couple of weeks ago. I follow a couple of people on Twitter who live out there, and I mean the idea that you were telling people in Los Angeles where it's over 100 degrees because of our state policy of trying to go to renewables. We don't have enough backup energy sources to keep your air conditioning on. I mean, we're going to shut your power off for 3 hours in the heat of the day. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, I've had a lot of my right wingers have been zinging me stuff about it. It's always the liberals' fault, right? Which is such BS. I can't go there, but I mean, the idea there's always a limit on the amount of air conditioning and so forth. Whenever you look at in Chicago when we had the really hot weather, you know, years ago when we had more industry here, we would set the records, you know, if it was 98 or something. Every year, your power, even though people have more efficient stuff, it seems like the peak use is always higher than the year before. Maybe it isn't now, but for a long time it was.
This is not what's happening in California is not the result of anything other than the state's non-market driven decision to go to renewable energy and force renewables in, and they lose their renewable generating capacity starting at about 4 p.m. and it kills them. They can't keep up, and obviously the whole point of going to this, you know, substituting renewables for gas-fired or nuclear is that you're not building other power plants to back up the renewables when they drop off at 4 p.m. And I mean, that you could find any number of sources that talk about that. I don't know. I'm not blaming liberals or conservatives. I'm just saying this was a state government decision to do this. And a number of other states have idiotically signed up for it, although they haven't gotten that far along. And it's going to have the same effect. It's the same effect they had in Germany. They've knocked all their generating capacity offline in favor of renewables. Their energy rates their energy costs are spiking. You know, California pays, 60-70% more per kilowatt hour than anybody else in the country? And they can't get enough to support themselves. It's ridiculous.
Well, what they were doing for a while is near the bigger cities. I mean, clearly if you have stuff a ways away, you have degradation all along the lines. I mean, one of the biggest investment we could make here is in the lines themselves. And we never seem to do that because everybody fights over who wants to do it, right? And there's a huge fight for that. Well, it's not just renewables versus other stuff. I mean, we had some listeners that were worried about it a few years ago, and I dug into digging a lot of some of the science behind some of this stuff. And it's not just the amount of plants, not just the amount of renewables, it's where they are, how soon you get the stuff. What people's response had been for a while is, like, in the downtown area in Chicago, I mean, not in downtown itself, but surrounding it, you don't even know that the thing's there. It's a gas-fired, essentially, power plant that you can fire up in a half hour on a real hot day, and you can turn it on at 10 in the morning because it's natural gas. All of a sudden, you can push power out of there. And those were the bad day cover-ups, right? Because
and that's what they have not done in California.
Well, yeah, you got to do that. I mean, everybody knows you got to do that.
But they don't. They have not. They specifically have not done that. They put a moratorium on new gas fired plants or nukes. I mean, ideally, if what you're worried about is greenhouse gases, you should be switching to nuclear. But of course, California won't do that, and because of the stigma. And so, what they end up with is, deliberately, I mean, it's remarkable. This is the functional equivalent in power terms of putting old people with COVID back into nursing homes. They deliberately cut the capacity of their system because they don't have the backups, either battery or whatever. They don't have the backups when their renewable systems, wind and solar, drop offline in the late afternoon.
But there's more to this. There's more to this than meets the eye, Lou. It's not just, you know, liberal versus the smart guys. This is there's a lot going on with your Pamela Edison and your People's Gas. They don't want to be the provider of electricity anymore. They want to just be the provider of the service to your house. So they want to just charge you 30, 40, 50 bucks a month, whether you use it or not. And that's their game now. And so the point where they don't want to run the nuclear plants. I mean, in Illinois, they're threatening the governor again. We're just going to shut them down. If you don't give us like a real lot of money to keep them going, we're going to shut them down. Now, in Illinois, to this day, if you wanted to open up a factory, a big factory here in Chicago, and you could figure out a way where it was all electric and your people worked at night, you could damn near run the place for free. Well, not for free, but real cheap, because there's so much capacity at night here because of the nukes and stuff. That some of the coal plants have gone offline, so maybe is not the same as it used to be. But you can actually, that's where the guys that just left, man, tells the name of the plant, Finkel's. Finkel's Steel, they actually had electric blast furnaces. And they only ran them at night because they got such a deal from ComEd. It's scary. But some of the stuff, like if you go down to Indiana, I don't know if you've driven to Indianapolis, if you ever had the misfortune to have to do that, well, you'll go.
Oh, many times, I'm afraid.
But you're gonna go buy a massive wind farm, right?
Yep.
With all the turbines and stuff, and you'll see, on a nice breezy day, you'll see a third of them on. And you might say, "Why, Buffalo Breath? Would you have half of these things off on a nice day?" Well, my buddy, lady who bartends at Tripoli, her husband is a high wire dude for the Commonwealth Edison or whoever else, and he says they turn them off because the grid can't handle them. The question is who gets what on the grid,
right?
And there's all kinds of wind farms in say South Dakota, but there's a new I don't know the engineering of it, but there's new lines that allow way more power to less degradation to make it from point A to point B, so. Now the question comes down, in that part of the grid from, say, North Dakota or Minnesota or someplace, they got plenty of renewable stuff to help feed Chicago. But you can't get it here because the grid basically sucks. So now the question is, who pays for the new grid? And Commonwealth Edison says, I'm not paying for it. I'm happy with the old grid. I got my stuff on there, and why should I give a crap about cheap energy coming from North Dakota? So on one hand they're a provider, and on one hand they're blocking other providers. On the other hand they're just paying to get it to your house. I mean, there's no coordination.
I'm not going to defend, the actions of these guys in terms of whatever. I'm just saying, given the status quo, the government in California made we talked about this before. The decisions that are based on ideology rather than reality.
Oh, I get it.
And it made a decision based on ideology saying we are going to go to renewables because ideologically that comports with our world, with our view, rather than, and I mean, this is the denial of reality that we are seeing over and over again, not just in energy situations, but in all kinds of sociological, cultural, and economic situations. Where you have people who are ideologues saying, this is what I want, and I really don't care how it's going to work out. This is what I want because I think that's the right thing to do. We start replacing what should be economic decisions that Tom Howe would make or Chief would make, with decisions that this comports with my ideological, moral view of the world. And when you start throwing moral labels on things that should be strictly economic or politically smart decisions, then it becomes impossible to generate sort of meaningful arguments for or against, because everybody says, well, you're immoral if you take that position.
Lou, you're talking about
that's permeating our social decision making.
Lou, you're talking about the state that allowed Enron to exist. They were so stupid, and I use that term deliberately, and I was never allowed in our house, by the way, to allow California Power to be sold in Nevada and sold back to California like four times the price.
Oh, I know.
We're talking about the same people. So you're not going to get an argument out of me about how smart they are. I mean,
I know. Well, that's what got Arnold Schwarzenegger elected. Remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
They had exactly the same situation they've got right now, where they couldn't supply power. They were doing rolling blackouts, and Arnold, you know, Gray or whatever his name was, I think that was the name of the governor, they generated a successful recall against him and put a Republican in as the governor of California. And I, you know, here's the real irony. Arnold was not a bad governor.
No, I don't think he was at all, in fact. And, but if you're going to do stuff, like here, I don't know if they still do it, but here in Illinois, what they used to do, they have these vast underground caverns where they used to be coal mines, I guess. Well, somehow or another, somebody who was pretty clever, and they filled them up with water. They naturally fill up with water, or something happened. And every night, because there was so much power at night, they would pump water essentially upstream. And then during the day, when it ran down, it would turn turbines and make electricity. But if you're going to have like the renewables and those kinds, especially wind, I mean, you're going to have more. If you have a windy night, you're going to have more power at night than you need. You need a way to store it, right? And then, and there's a lot of ways that you can do that or not do that. But I mean, there's
that. They're kinetic. They're called kinetic batteries. And those kinds of systems, you'll see them in England, for example. There are, if you drive along, you will see a reservoir that's built up at the top of a hill. So they'll have a hill, you know, 500 meters or whatever it is tall, and they will put a, you know, 15 or 20 million gallon reservoir in the top of the hill, and at night they fill it with water, and at the day they let the water run out, generating the hydropower on exactly this principle. Cheap power at night runs the pump to fill it up. Expensive power is generated during the day. Net economic win. Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. It's right. It's in use in several places in Europe that I can think of.
Well, Lou, you know, it strikes me, this has been a kind of a theme of the show, because, I mean, obviously the politics enters into the business world, and you'll see what's happening with some of these companies, and this last week with this, you know, the tech wreck we've had here a little bit, you know, especially in Tesla, and I've been, you haven't seen it on CNBC or any of the other places, but I've been concerned that some of the turnaround, and when I say concerned, it's when stocks go down, people lose more money than when they go up. I mean, it's just, if you don't know enough about the industry, take my word on this, it's true. Because people borrow money at the top, they don't necessarily in the bottom. And we can go into that some other day when Lou's not here. But the point being is, I don't know how a firm can send out, you know, thousands of margin calls without the person on top realizing, wait a minute, how does a stock split create a margin call? How does somebody not notice that sounds weird, and why are we doing that? And what bleep up did we do? And I'm not, you know, I don't want Maddie playing the Andy Mayberry song, but I'm wondering, Lou, in the midst of all the political fighting back and forth, and we have, you know, guys on the show that are, you know, spoofing for one side or the other, I'm starting to see, now that I'm in the middle, it just seems to me that I don't know that, you know, Lori Lightfoot, Jay, the Power and Light people, I don't know if the president, I don't know that the people are that doggedly in their own side, other than they're just incompetent in terms of, I mean, I think when stuff like that was being done in the 50s and 60s, you might find out that the guy who was the person at Commonwealth Edison making these kind of calls might have been like the guy on a destroyer that kept the destroyer running or something. It had some common mechanical sense or some background other than just being in politics that maybe could sit there and go, okay, well, if we've got all this power at night, how do we either get people to use it at night by incentivizing them or finding a way to store it for the daytime? I mean, is anybody asking me, or am I just being an old fart? I mean, these are questions.
Let me take this because I'm not the guy you want to talk to about the option calls and margin calls that you just described. Let's take something a little more basic and close to home there in Chicago, because this is a phenomenon that is going on throughout a number of our big cities where these so-called social justice prosecutors and state's attorneys and DAs have been elected. You sit back and you look at your crime statistics and the things that are happening in your streets. And you and I would look at this and say, okay, this is a relatively straightforward process in the sense of you catch the bad guys, you lock them up, you try to get them incarcerated, the shooters. We know roughly who these guys are because we had a police chief, you know, 10 years ago who was running this kind of an operation. We find the bad guys, we find the people controlling the bad guys, we lock them up. And as we lock them up, we take them off the streets, and we at the same time engage in other efforts to prevent new bad guys from coming up, but we get the bad guys off the streets, and we lock them down. And that makes our streets safer. You would think this would be a relatively straightforward causal connection. And yet, what do you see from Fox? What do you see from the DA in Portland, in New York, in Philadelphia, in Boston, in Minneapolis? You see, I don't like that we have so many people locked up.
Not just people, black people.
I'm going to release them.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to charge bail. And so we're not going to incarcerate these people anymore because my ideological worldview is this is somehow unfair to put people in jail, either on bail without bail or with bail or just charge them. That's unfair. So I'm going to release these people. So, you know, and then they act surprised when the murder rates go up, the shooting rates go up, the violent crime rates skyrocket because these people are back out on the street. And I'm going, hello? What distorted view of reality do you have that causes you to think that your ideological perspective of we have too many people in jail is somehow unrelated to this jack up in our violent crime rates? Or in the case of the riots, which are going on almost every night in almost every major city, in the case of the riots, the same people being arrested over and over again and coming back and rioting again. What's the worldview? What's your worldview or what's your view of reality that causes you not to understand that?
It gets worse, Lou, because it's, and to me, this is a total anathema because when I do positions for my clients or when I do them for myself, certainly when I was on the trading floor, very, very rarely, Lou, very rarely, unfortunately, do you ever just put something on, I think I'll buy Nike today at 115, actually it's trading 114.75, and tomorrow morning or this afternoon before I even can screw it up, somebody says, oh, oops, we're going to buy Nike for like 150, and all of a sudden, I just made $35. I mean, I don't know if that's ever happened to me in 40 years in the business, but it could happen, right? I mean, you know, what do they say? Even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then. But I mean, virtually everything that I do for my clients or for me, if I put an option spread on or something, by the end of the time, it never is the same position that I put on. There's always an adjustment somewhere. It's not going here. It's going the wrong way. Let's roll this. Let's take it to a credit. Let's do something. There's something along the way where you have to keep your eye on it. I think that most of what these people, the mistakes they make, I understand maybe Kim Fox saying, well, you know, we have so many people in county jail, we're busting at the seams, and look, a lot of these guys look like they're kids that are, you know, caught shoplifting. Well, I don't know, and plus they can't make bail. I don't know that they should necessarily be in jail. Plus, we got 11,000 people in the jail, and it's only designed for 5, and this basically blows. I get that. But wouldn't you think that if you let out 100 of these people, and all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, the people on Michigan Avenue are saying, hey, what the hell? That my place is getting shoplifted, you know, right and left, and it's the same people, that you have the intelligence to say, this is not, I can't just do this. There needs to be a halfway house. There needs to be something. I can't just do this because look at the effect it's having. I mean, but there doesn't seem to be any look back, any ability to say, all right, we tried it. it made sense to try it. It didn't work. We're going to try something else. I don't get that, Louis. Is it the media that doesn't let people do that? Are these people so one-sided mentally that they can't even say I screwed up? Because everybody screws up every day, Lou. It's not. I mean, name a day where you went through where you were perfect ever. I mean, at anything. I mean, you go to pull a car in the lot and you go, okay, I gotta back out because I swung in just wrong. I mean, nothing, your whole day is not perfect. You fix it. You get it between the lines, right? I mean, I mean, where am I wrong here?
I don't have an answer for you on this, but I can recommend, you know, Barbara Tuchman wrote a book on this called The March of Folly, which is a very good, I thought, historical assessment of just really stupid decisions that should have people should have picked up on. World War I, by the way, is one of them. But in terms of just people ignoring reality around them in favor of their own particular worldview, and. Let me take it down to.
Well, we got to go to break here. Let me just give one minor example. Then we got to go to break. Everybody's known. Everybody who's got an ounce of sense anywhere has known that one of the problems with county jail in the last 8 years has been closing the Tinley Mental Health Facility. That a lot of those people that weren't violent but they can't take care of themselves somehow found a way to steal a gallon of milk somewhere and end themselves in county jail. They're not bad people. They're not a danger, but they need to be somewhere, but they don't need to be in jail and they can't take care of themselves. Everybody, every sheriff has said this. Every single one has said the place it's become the new mental institution. Yet the Tinley laid fallow for, I'm going to say, years till finally somebody, they couldn't wait to sell it to basically burn the bridges. Why didn't they just open it back up, Lou? I mean, there was an obvious mistake, but we can't turn it. S&P futures down 17, NASDAQ futures down 23. We can't ever admit anything. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ellis, Mr. Marvin on the board. Lou Michaels with us on the phone. S&P futures down 16. NASDAQ futures down 18. They were down a little bit more earlier. Dow futures down 168. Just for a review, yesterday we were up 439 in the Dow. We were up 67 in the S&P. We were up 293 in the NASDAQ. These were big numbers. Obviously, they're not as much as we were down the day before, but we sold off pretty good on the close. The futures sold off probably 30, 40 points in the last 20 minutes. We're up a lot more than that. So now if you take what we're down here a little bit, we're down reasonably from the top at 2 o'clock, say, but still up from the day before when it wasn't so good. Over in Europe, DAX down 9, call that flat. FTSE down 44.7%. CAC around down 19.4%. So not much going on over there. Asia bouncing back the other way. Nikkei up 202.9%. They're like a day behind us, though. Shanghai down 19. That's 0.6%. Hang Seng down 155, also down 0.6%. Bonds unchanged at 0.70. Bund minus 0.44. Japan positive 0.026. Oil, which has had a horrendous week, down another 57 cents, 37.48. They were $42, I'm going to say, a week ago today. Brent down 48 cents, 40.31. Natural gas, 237, as we were talking about with Lou, it made it down to under, it was like $1.70-something. And all the way up here with the, they do have some of those quick-fire, let's say reactors, but units out there for natural gas. Our Bob, $1.11. And we've got gold is up $3, $19.57. Silver up 30 cents, $27.39. Big run-up in silver the last couple days. Copper down 3 cents, it's $3.01, but hanging above $3. Matty, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're nice and quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. You'll run into some taillights on the inbound Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. Stevenson looking good. Southside expressways are all quiet, as is Lakeshore Drive. Only crash in the area is out in the western suburbs. York Road at Irving Park, there is a crash. Weather today, another kind of dreary, drizzly day for the third day in a row before we see some sunshine again tomorrow. Today, rain on and off, a high of 64. Right now it's cloudy, still dry, and 64, so we'll remain in the mid-60s all day with lots of clouds and some rain on and off. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 93 today. Right now it's clear and 68. In sports, White Sox bounce back after a tough loss on Tuesday and had no problem with the Pirates, blowing out Pittsburgh 8-1. It was a battle of Cy Young Award finalists last night at Wrigley. Trevor Bauer outdueled Yu Darvish, though. Darvish gave up a three-run homer in the first, and that was it. The Reds won 3-0. Both pitchers shut the lineups down the rest of the way. But the Cubs offense couldn't come back from a three-run deficit in the first, and Cubs lose to the Reds 3-0. They're 2.5 up on St. Louis in the NL Central, 4.5 up on Milwaukee. Diamondbacks continued to struggle. They lost again to the Dodgers 6-4.
Jason. I'm pretty impressed with how St. Louis has managed to hang in here with all these games.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and the Cubs still, as much as you say, you say these guys are give all these great statistics. To me, the huge swing from the heels on strike two, where you missed the ball by 3 feet. I still
can't. I said the Cubs have great statistics.
You said they're what's the new one? The OPS or something. Even though they all look like they're batting 200, that actually their stats aren't bad.
No, a lot of their stats are bad. I mean, Ian Happ and Jason Hayward have been really good, but Rizzo, Bryant, Schwarber and Baez have been horrible. Contreras has been really good the last 2 weeks after he had a bad start, but he's batting like 400 the last 2 weeks, and he's getting his his numbers back up to where they should be. Now, the problem is these are small sample sizes, but it's a small sample size season, so you don't have time to get back to your normal stats. You got to step it up, and they only have, 16 games left. They started out 13-3. They're 12-16 since then.
Yeah.
So they've just been treading water and playing 500 ball the last 10 days, and they're still going to make the playoffs just because of the top eight get in. But if they think they're going to win the division and do anything playing the way they've been playing the last couple of weeks, I don't see it happening.
Well, they have trouble scoring, and when is Quintana toast? Why isn't he getting a starter somewhere?
He has a lat issue. He came back and he pulled like a lat, and so he's with a pitcher. Obviously, that can be a week, or you can be done for the season.
That's what happens to Lou. Every time he tries something a little different, he pulls something. You
know? Well, I'm pulling stuff all the time. By the way, do you know what the formal or the correct term for the lat muscle is?
I actually don't.
No, I don't either.
My recollection is that it's latissimus dorsi, I believe.
Oh yeah, there's a bunch of dorsis.
I think you're right.
Anyway,
I
it's think like somebody right. saying you pull your glute. What does that mean? Well, it's gluteus maximus is the muscle.
I knew that one.
Anyway, you can look that up. I think that's right. I'm sitting here. I'm not looking at moose heads anymore, as Chief used to say, but there are animal heads on the wall. But I'm sitting here in the twilight. It's not quite dawn yet, and trying to just pull the stuff out of my head.
You're not. You're not like in a coffin naked like Skull and Bones, are you?
No, I'm not at that point yet. I wanted to just wrap real quickly, just again, stupid. As I said, I try to reference at least one book during the show. March of Folly by Tuckman talks about this, but I'm going to bring it a little closer to home in terms of just people with a worldview that just doesn't comport with reality. I rewatched The Last Dance when I was last week, as I was looking for something to watch on TV, and my wife asked me, who was not from Chicago and not familiar with Jordan and the situation with the Bulls, and my wife asked me, why did Krause blow up? Why was he so fixated on getting rid of Phil Jackson and with the dominoes falling after that? Why did that happen? Why would somebody who is absolutely dependent on these people for their livelihood and the success of these people for their livelihood, why did he insist on forcing the issue with Jackson? And I said, because his worldview told him that he was the genius, and we're talking about Krause now.
Yep.
He was the genius who put all this together. And he could do it again. And it was an absolute failure to recognize the uniqueness of the situation that he had with Jackson and Jordan and the people that he assembled. So he puts this fantastic team together and then says to himself, I'm the guy that's responsible for their success. And, my father, the professional football coach, had a great saying, and I know I put it on the air here, but it was with regards to one of his players who eventually made it into the Hall of Fame. And the offensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings came to my dad one day and said, this guy's three-point stance looks terrible. Why don't you correct that? And my father goes, he's blocking everybody that we ask him to block and doing exactly what we need him to do. When you've got a goose laying golden eggs, you don't mess with the goose. And that's just another example. The Bulls situation was another example of somebody who had a fixated worldview and of himself, and reality just wasn't going to intrude on that worldview, even though everybody looked around and said, Jerry, what the hell are you doing?
There's a question for both of you, Mavens. Do you think that mentality, some of it was skewed because he actually came from baseball? When I say that is, it is possible in baseball, if you have a terrific organization, to spin essentially from one star-studded cast to the other if you do it right over a period of, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. And you're not.
But he had no experience with that.
I know what I'm saying, but in basketball, you and I look at it, and Maddie knows more about it than me, but that is absolutely impossible.
It's impossible
in basketball.
There's a lot of nuance to that situation. One, the most flummoxing thing about it is that Krause had nothing to do with Michael Jordan being there.
Right.
And the fact that he did a great job of plugging in pieces. He made the trade for Pippen on draft night, which was obviously a huge play. Drafted Horace Grant, which was a great pick. B.J. Armstrong did well with the role players. Got Tony Kukoc out of Europe. Made the trade Will Perdue for Dennis Rodman. I mean, every move he made around Jordan seemed to work, but he thought it was because of him and didn't realize it was because of Jordan.
exactly right.
And
I mean, Maddie, one of the most telling things in that series when they were introducing the and I can't remember what year it was. Introducing the players, you know, for the championship team, for their presentation of their ratings. And they introduce him as, the announcer says, and the architect of the Bulls championship season, Jerry Krause. And I'm going, nobody who has an ounce of introspection ever introduces themselves or has themselves introduced.
Right.
Nobody. And I just, that told me all I needed to know about the guy in like 5 seconds.
Well, yeah, I will say a couple of other things though. One, he did do a great job of building around Jordan, so I'll give him credit for that. Two, I think Reinsdorf had a lot to do with the meddling and the irritation, that was going on as much as Krause did. Three, I think Phil Jackson was done. I think his health was bad and he needed a couple years to refresh and regroup. He had to get his hip replaced. And I think he was kind of on his way out anyway, and I think they sensed that. But I think there was a lot more to it than just Krause breaking it up. But Krause, the ego was definitely there. And then he thought, you know, he tried to rebuild the next, you know, dynasty with Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler, and it didn't go anywhere.
Well, the people have to have special people in basketball. You have to have somebody who really, I mean, you have to have the heart and soul of the team. You had Jerry Sloan for a while. You know, and the Bulls overachieved in his era, right? But the role players, they weren't just as much as The Last Dance was, and Michael Jordan was very special. They damn near won the year he wasn't there. They came real close. It wasn't like they were a bunch of schlumps.
No, they were good. They won like 50-some games, and they made it to the conference finals one year. The next year, before he came back, they almost missed the playoffs.
Right,
though.
Right.
They had the one year when he was gone.
That was before Rodman, right?
Right, where they kind of rode at the same winning energy because they'd won three in a row and they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, and that was great. But that would have been the peak of a team without Jordan.
But they also lost Grant and BJ, too, and Cartwright.
They had them that year, though.
Not the year they were really crummy, did they?
Year they were really crummy, they didn't. Right. That was year five, and that's when Jordan came back at the end of the regular season.
How did they get Longley?
He was out of Australia, so I assume they just signed him. I don't think he was drafted. I'll have to check. They may have drafted him.
I thought he played here. I thought he played for one of those teams out west or somebody.
Well, played for the Suns after the Bulls. But
no, I mean, I thought he played for one of the colleges.
Yeah, you're right. He played for University of New Mexico, which I'd forgotten. I'll see when he was drafted.
But anyway, that discussion. I mean, one of the things that just sort of jumped out at me was how badly that was managed. And I mean, and again, I come at this from the perspective of somebody whose father was involved in these kinds of decisions in assembling teams. And, you know, the ability to consistently hit with a collection of players that get along together and that perform well and that do what you want them to do is a real talent. And, you know, a lot of guys just don't understand, well, we hit the jackpot here with one or two players that allowed us to build a nucleus around them. And that was just moral luck. Nobody knew these guys were going to be this good. Nobody knew.
Well, Lou, you know, you like grabbing a cup of coffee when everybody else is drinking a beer, but you know, it was played down a real lot. And I wonder why. Is the first year that Jordan came in. The Bulls had some talent before he got there. They didn't have Michael Jordan kind of talent, but they had some talent. And the part about after every game, you know, he'd show up and there's nothing but drugs and booze in the room. And he said, yeah. I'm not doing that. So they got a bunch of other guys that felt the same way, that basically showed up to play every day. And you wonder at the time some of the teams they were beating, not that they weren't better, but if some of the other team, I mean, how embedded that was in the league, I guess is my question. And just by the Bulls being straight, how much that gave them an advantage.
I think it absolutely did. But it's, you know, I look at Jordan now and what he was doing, and I sort of think of him a little bit like I think of Bill Belichick, who puts in a system and you gotta conform to the system. And if you can conform to the system, he can make it work. Jordan did very much analogy, but I see Jordan doing the same thing once he sort of takes the team over in the late 1980s. He basically says, this is the system I've got to play with. Now, to his credit, you know, it was all Michael Jordan because he was the guy that believed that you know, he could do it all, and Collins and the other coaches realized they could design it around him. But when Jackson comes in, he gets it, you know, he gets him to move it around a little bit. But the system always remained sort of centered on Jordan, whether it was shooting or passing or defending or whatever. They were able to work it around that one guy consistently, and that was the system they had. Belichick does something very similar, I think, with Fritz. And I look at that and go, okay, so within the confines of the system you set up, you're going to have success. And a special person recognizes that. Jordan recognizes it. Belichick recognizes it. It's a harder thing to recognize than you might think.
I think, I'm going to say that, remember the one part in there where, what game was it, Matty, where Jordan was basically bitching to Jackson in one of the timeouts that, you know, he's being like double or triple covered, and Jack says, well, who's open? And he goes, well, Pax. He goes, well, throw it to Pax. I don't know if you remember that part. And Pax,
that was a playoff game, yeah. No,
yeah, and Pax made like the next five baskets or something. And you know, but I mean, he had a. By the way,
Luke Longley, just to close the loop on that, and I remember this now reading it, but I'd forgotten it. He was drafted by the Timberwolves when they were a newer franchise, and he played his first three seasons there, and then he was actually traded to the Bulls for Stacey King. And so then he played for the Bulls from 94 to 98. And then after Jordan retired, he signed a contract with the Suns but was never very good. Then 1 year with the Knicks, and then he was out of the league. He was out of the league pretty quickly, actually.
Well, he was pretty beat up his last year. I mean, he barely made it to the playoffs.
And he played professionally, you know, in Australia, among other places, too, before he came.
Right. He was not – he had some mileage on his tires.
Yeah.
But Bill Belichick, he reminds me, plus I love the sweatshirts, but he reminds me of when I hear these coaches that have this system or this plan, you know, I look at, you know, the guy at Notre Dame where I've never really was a big fan of, Kelly, and I always believe that if Jerome Bettis showed up, he either say, I don't play a fullback or you need to become a guard or something. They wouldn't even use the guy.
I mean, he wouldn't have recruited him.
He wouldn't have recruited him.
No, he wouldn't have recruited him, right.
But I'm saying, the guy that always was my favorite, you know, he had great ball players, was Johnny Wooden. I mean, he won for years with a center-dominated team, then he won for years with a forward-dominated team, then he won for years with a guard-dominated. Belichick's the same way. He has his playbook, and to me, he's a genius at saying, okay, given the 11 guys I have out here, these are the 20 plays that are going to work. Give me another 11 guys, and these are the other 20 plays. I mean, the system always seems to flow through whatever he happens to have.
Well, you remember, you may not remember, we talked about this briefly one time. My theory on what the Patriots do because of their versatility is that they try not to get too complicated. They have they build an offense on bringing in players that can do two or three things really well. They They need people who can do two or three things really well, and they don't ask them to do things other than those two or three things really well. They draft and they sign people who can do that, and then they build an offense around players who can, for example, run specific routes, who can handle specific blocking charges, who can make specific moves or run specific kinds of plays. And that's what they look for. And around that, they build their offense and their defense. But it's never so complicated that the player is being asked to do things that the player can't do, or that the player has to relearn every week. And I think that's the genius of Belichick. That's the only way I see him being able to succeed over and over again with new people every year.
Well, Tony Dungy gave him the biggest compliment one day, at least to me. He said, when I was coaching, whenever you played Belichick's team, you could study all the film you wanted and looked at their tendencies. Didn't do you any good. He said, you might as well stay home having a beer. Because when they came out on Sunday, everything was different than the week before. I mean, there was no tendency that you could count on at all.
Right. And the ability to do that, the ability to, I think, again, revamp offense and defense, I think involves, rather than putting a whole new system in, you are simply telling the players, look, these three or four things, we're going to mix them up in a different way.
Right.
And that's, I wanted to jump a little bit from sort of denying reality to another example of it, and that is the decision by the Academy, Motion Picture Academy, that handles the Oscars, to suddenly put what are effectively quotas in for minority and, I for lack of a better term, I can't even call it minority hiring, diversity hiring,
yeah,
in the industry, in order to qualify for an Academy Award and to be nominated. And for those listeners who don't know, the Academy published this list yesterday. They talked about doing this before. They published the list yesterday. Basically, you're going to have X number of people of color, specific genders, LBGT, XYZ, in your crew, in the cast. These are all going to be done by a number, and they're going to have spot checks on the film set to do this. And the minute I saw this, I was going, well, you know, I realize that the Academy is not hiring people, so they're not technically an employer.
Yeah.
But they're trying to influence the decisions of the employers. The kind of quotas that they are describing are categorically in violation of federal and state civil rights laws. You can't discriminate using a quota system, because when you do, you make race or gender or whatever protected factor you want to promote, you are making them explicit and motivating factors in an employment decision, and that violates the law. Now, I saw somebody say, you know, the Academy's not the employer, so they're not making the decision. But there's all kinds of case law out there that says, you know what, if you've got a customer that says, I'm not going to work with so-and-so because he's black, or I'm not going to work with so-and-so because she's a woman, you can't make an employment decision based on that. That's passive discrimination, and you can't do that.
You probably were not listening to CNBC yesterday. They must have gone on for about 2 hours on this on board spots. They're interviewing all these African-American people. And it's
same issue.
But, I mean, it's clearly over the line to where you're going out and you're only going to put two black people in those spots. And, oh, by the way, two Asian people or two Hispanic people don't count. They better be black.
Well, you can't. Yeah. I mean, you can't do that. You can't make those kinds of decisions. The law is very clear on this. And I'm going, what are they doing out there?
The same kind of discrimination some white people have used for a long time. Not all. They exactly want it the other way, to quote, like make up for stuff. And I don't think you do that. Well, I think you get the most qualified people.
The Supreme Court, I can't remember who it was. It may have been Saturday O'Connor, who said in one of the school admission decisions in the early aughts, the remedy, or maybe it was Roberts, the remedy for discrimination is not more discrimination. and or illegal discrimination, and that's what's going on here. And I'm just going, come on. In terms of reality, the reality is you work in the universe of these civil rights laws that say we don't want you to discriminate based on race. And to put a system in that requires you to discriminate based on race or gender or sexual identity or other protected factors, to do that flies in the face of reality.
Well,
but again, the ideological perspective drives that train rather than some kind of logical cause and effect relationship.
Well, I think there's all kinds of issues with boards. We've gone over that before. But clearly, the current system, and I'll hand this to the, I mean, I absolutely agree with the people who want more minorities on there. The current system where you better be a board guy at two other places that's never voted no for a pay raise. And you, by the way, if you used to be a CEO, that's fine too. You got to break out of that little group somewhere, Lou. I mean,
I agree, but the idea that you are going to force a publicly traded company or a company registered in your state to pick people based on their gender or race rather than their business qualifications is A, illegal, I think, and unconstitutional, and B, just a bad idea.
Well, you're gonna find some black guy or some lady or some Hispanic guy that'll vote yes for your pay raise. I mean, right?
Of course. It's what happens with minority contracting. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Lou, take care of yourself, bud. Talk to you next week. Don't break your back shoveling that snow, man. Can't you just wait for it to be 100 tomorrow and let it melt?
That's my thought process. Yeah, that's what I'm doing, but yeah.
SP Futures down 10. SP Futures up 8, so we're turning to the north here. We'll be right back with Mr. Dan Janitas.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, no bank station jacks. Not Tom Allen, Mr. Webber on the board. SP futures not only down 7, and NASDAQ has just popped like 50 points, up 35. So we'll see. Maybe we'll have 2 days of rallies here. But boy, NASDAQ is just flying around. I mean, there's not a whole lot of standing orders there. We have Mr. Dan Janitas, as we do every Thursday, from Kratos Capital. Dan, you catch this 50 point swing in the NASDAQ? You bought some right before the commercials?
Of course. Yeah, we had it. Actually, we were doing a little buying on Tuesday, and that certainly helped, and a little bit last Friday and a little more yesterday. This short term blip, I think, really was driven by, you know, as we all know, the tech sector getting ahead of itself, and there have been some good opportunities. You know, it's created a few good opportunities here in the short run, so. Relatively good tone in the market.
You think so? I'm struggling with it, to be honest with you. I've been trying, with all my guests this week, to get some sort of an inkling of when the two worlds are going to collide. The 30-40% of people that are in real bad shape with some that are in pretty good shape. I don't know which comes where. Which are we meeting in the middle, or hopefully things get better and we never have to worry about it, but, I don't know. It seems like every month here, we're just putting off another month. I don't see anything happening anytime soon here. Again, it's the Chicago malaise, I think, that's affecting me a little bit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a fair amount of cash, and I think that's what people have to remember. In terms of economy, from the small business owner's point of view, this has really been a terrible period. But then I think from the sort of the other side of the glass of being half full, you got to look at the vaccine and the really good probability of seeing a vaccine by the first of the year. And I think when you have a light at the end of the tunnel, I think that's what the market is focused on right now. And upside from here, if you will, we've kind of seen the worst. So I think there's a decent tone. There's a fair amount of cash. There's some good opportunities, and I think the good investors are out there trying to, you know, pick through everything. Again, my area is not following, you know, the Amazons and the Teslas up and not riding that momentum. And for the people who have done it and made money, this might be a good opportunity to lighten up a little or to trim back some of your position and to look for some other opportunities. And there are plenty of names that have been left behind. You know, we just did looking this morning at the Russell 2000 Value Index for the year, year to date, down 20%. The Russell 2000 Growth Index up 2.5%. So that discrepancy, I think, in itself creates some opportunities. So again, looking at looking at value, which is really more of our style, we have some optimism. Also looking at yield, we've spoken about this before, but looking at some opportunities outside of bonds that still have yield, and a couple of the names I've mentioned in the past, the preferred stock, Blue Knight, BKEPP, that is actually, I wanted to clarify, that's actually a convertible preferred. Right now, the dividend yield is over 12%. That stock has done very well during this three-day downturn in the market, and that is, you know, that would be a good name to switch into. It's a business that their business is asphalt storage. At some point in the near future, we're going to see continued emphasis on building out infrastructure and roads, and the asphalt storage play has actually been a real positive one. Company gets paid It's like rent, and it's a take or pay contract, so it's a pretty dependable cash flow. And for getting a little over 12%, I've diversifying a little bit away from those high flying tech names, I think this is a good opportunity.
Dan, the preferred stack, I learned about that 50 years ago in college. For a while, a lot of people had them, then nobody, is it? The ones you're finding, are these kind of legacy companies that have had them for a long time, or is this something that's coming back?
It's something that's coming back. And I think part of the reason, there's two reasons that we've taken a closer look. One is that we're always looking for new ideas and diversification, but the other is, again, seeing this inflated market. And when I say inflated, I'm talking about valuations of a lot of the tech companies, and looking for yield ideas away from the traditional corporate bonds that, where spreads have tightened and you don't have as much value. So where do you find that? And I come back to these, to the preferreds. We've seen seen some positive trends in preferred stocks over the last month now. We think these are good, steady plays. You might have to get away from those exciting industries and look at some industries that are more long-term stable, but it's a good way to get some nice yield and to sort of temper some of this volatility that we may be entering in the next couple months prior to the elections.
I suspect most of the listeners know what a preferred stock is. It's somewhere between a bond and a common stock. I mean, if a company gets taken over, unless you have one that's convertible into common, I mean, you're only going to be locked into whatever the preferred pays. But you also, if the company goes under, the common stock shareholders are going to lose their money before you do. So you're a little bit more protected. Does anybody ever issue warrants with preferreds anymore like they used to, or warrants dead as a doorknob?
Some do on the new issue. You generally don't buy it. We buy most of our names in the secondary market because we like buying at a discount. And you're not necessarily going to get the warrants in the secondary market. I think you can buy them separately.
Right.
But once you, some of the new issues or preferreds will have warrants, not all of them. And just to follow up on your thought, in terms of the distinction between preferred stocks, you have those that are convertible preferreds that tend to trade more in lockstep with the common stock because of the conversion, the equity kicker. Now, one other name that I've mentioned, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Entertainment. So again, this is not the, it is the same company that does the books, but that part of their business is private. The video on demand part of their business is public, and they have a preferred that is not convertible. And there's been a huge divergence between the common and the preferred. In fact, the preferred looks cheap compared to the common right now, but this particular preferred would trade more like a bond.
Right.
And the dividend yield is 10.6%. So if you're looking for a true bond alternative, Chicken Soup for the Soul Preferred, CSSEP, and is it, video on demand business, stable business, really good cash flow business, a business that has, is well managed, good management team. I just spoke to them again last week. A lot of positive developments in that company, but where else can you get 10.6% with a company that has, it's cash flow focused? And again, this is a fixed income alternative. So you're not buying it for the equity kick. You're buying it strictly for the, as a fixed income instrument.
Dan, traditionally, these are good companies you're talking about, but if we're talking good companies, the preferred would usually trade, what, a half a percent higher than a 20-year bond from the same company? It was a little higher, right?
Well, right now, I think to get 10.6% on a bond that's trading like on a preferred that's trading like a bond, that's a lot more.
Right, I'm saying, that was my next
9%
question.
9% more?
No, I'm saying, but like, if that particular company put out a 20-year bond, what would they have to pay vis-a-vis the 10%
they're
paying in?
And that's really where we do our homework. If you're looking at a much larger or mega cap company or a name that's a go-go name that you see all the time that has a good capital structure. There, those names would be, they would not get as much on a preferred. If you're looking for some more out of the way smaller names, which is our market, you can, you know, if you do your homework, you can find some really good quality companies that are focused on, with good management teams that are focused on cash flow, and get some yields like you know, these two bonds or these two preferred stocks. And you're not going to find that yield on a fixed income instrument. They're actually trading cheaper, and it's going to be more than 50 basis points. I'm going to say more like 150 at this point.
Is that, Dan, because I mean, I don't know how much you followed. You probably do, because it seems to me like you follow everything. Is that because of some of the, I won't say recent, but in the last 10 or 15 year bankruptcies, where the people with the bonds managed to weasel themselves, that's a bad word, but managed to get themselves a seat at the table and ended up with stock and the new company coming out where none of the preferreds did? I mean, the risk ended up being quite a bit, I'll say, more different than it would have been learned to me in college or grad school. Just because the way the bankruptcy laws have fallen down on this.
Yeah, some of that did happen, and, you know, going back, you know, really in the last, which was probably now 12 years ago, if we go back to 08 when we had the last wave of bankruptcies, and certainly I've been involved in this business going back to the early 90s, and I was, you know, involved in helping in some of the workouts, so I absolutely agree with you on that. But the other thing that's happened sort of more in the last 5 or 7 years is smaller companies that wanted to access the markets, that wanted to get capital, that where their name maybe wasn't quite as well known, and they had some, you know, they hadn't been able to get their feet off the ground in terms of their finances or their visibility to the investor public. One of the few options they had was to issue preferred.
Right.
And they may have issued it to a specific investor base or a specific investor group. So I would say yes, in general, you know, companies going through harder financial times, or companies that are looking for, you know, to expand their capital base, but didn't have many options after maybe they had a restructuring or a change of organization. So yes, and then what they end up doing, which is good for the preferred holder, is they may end up buying them back. And like any time when you have a stock buyback, that's generally a good thing if you're, you know, unless you want to hold on to that yield, it's generally a positive for the company that they have the cash to be able to pay it back. So it's, you know, right now I think there's a sweet spot. There's a good period here. It's a good period to invest in preferred. Again, it's a nice yield pickup. And with the volatility that we just started seeing, I think we're going to continue to see over the next few months, it's a good, you know, it's a good diversifier.
Yeah,
one of the value better than.
I want to tie together a couple things here, and I want to ask somewhat of a question. Not somewhat a question. You mentioned that the Russell looks to be a relative buy here. Okay, and I, by the way, I don't disagree. I've been putting some people in there. Can't say as I've been knocking them dead by doing that, but I've been putting some people in there. I just wonder, though, and it is, I hope you tell me I'm all messed up here. I wonder what I see happening with the COVID and other things and what the Fed's doing. Then I'm going to say that the day Amazon went out and got their, you know, 2% 20-year bonds or some crap or whatever they got, some amazing number, that these two fine companies that you just mentioned, that their numbers are going to be 6-7, maybe? What would they, if they'd have gone out and had the same spread of debt that Amazon did, not the same size, obviously, what would they be paying versus an Amazon or a Microsoft?
Yeah, because of their size, it would probably be 6 or 7. The fact that they're, you know, when they're currently in the market today, their current market value, the current dividend yield, for example, is, say, like in excess of 10 and in excess of 12% on Blue Knight. So if they were to have a similar capital structure, that's, you know, because of their size. But what's interesting, that going back to the Fed and the liquidity that's been pumped into the system, that's really given a nice cushion to smaller and micro-cap names. And we have access because we're institutional buyers, but there hasn't been any trouble no matter how small the issue is. no matter how small the company is, we have not seen any issues with liquidity. In fact, this has probably been one of the best periods of liquidity in the market, and that has really that is part of what I think has kept the market afloat. It's just having this additional liquidity, and you know, hopefully we'll have a little more in the near future. We'll have another, we'll have a little more stimulus, but we don't need it right now. The market is, there's a lot of cash out there. There's a lot of movement of even small and less liquid names, traditionally less liquid names. In fact, probably, again, more than we've seen in quite some time.
Why I say this is, it's interesting that you and I are, as we're talking here, I don't know if any of the listeners even understand what I'm about to say here, but we're on two different levels of the chessboard here. You're talking about the ability to do stuff. I'm talking about the price. And I think you're right. They've managed to keep these markets going. But what I'm saying is the difference between 2% or 1% that Amazon gets versus 7%, which one of these firms looks to me like they could be double A rated or A rated. I mean, I think that spread's too high. And what I'm saying is if you,
exactly right.
if you look at that spread, how you can finance or not finance, especially if you zero into the biotechs and the vaccines, you know, where Johnson & Johnson can go out and get money at probably nothing, and some other guy with actually the vaccine is probably going to borrow at 10 or needs a preferred at 11 or something. That if you add that to the amount of small companies going out of business, I wonder, since you said it, I put money in for my people, am I all wet? Is this Russell ever coming back, or are we gonna end up with the very fascist four stocks in every industry? I'm starting to wonder that. I hope you're telling me we're not going there, but I'm wondering if we are.
Well, actually, I think you gave a good example, a very good example. So as an investor in fixed income, when I see Amazon issuing debt at 2%, that clearly doesn't make any sense at all from an investor's point of view. So what happens is investors start looking for yield, and as they look for yield, they go into smaller cap companies, or they go into companies that may not be as widely followed by the street. And when you start doing your homework, you're going to end up with names like the names that we follow, you know, all the time throughout the year. And there's been more support for these names than there has been even 5 years ago. So I do think we're going to have a move back towards value and towards smaller cap as we progress, because people want more yield. They also want a little more stability. So as we go into a period of not only September and October traditionally being volatile months, but an election that could potentially bring even more volatility, I think at least in the short run, let's say the next couple of months, there's going to be a demand for more stable names, and value in particular tends to, people look at value as a diversifier, and they look at it as something you get into when there's a little uncertainty in the market. So you don't want, you know, how much can you ride up a name, an equity that's, you know, valuation is trading at the highest levels ever, and how much can you, you know, how much 2%, you know, how many 2% bonds do you want to buy before you realize that if we have higher interest rates, you're going to get crushed? So you're going to look for other opportunities, and what I'm saying is there's a lot of names that have been overlooked, but I think now in the last month or so, we have seen more attention being focused on this part of the market, the value, the smaller names, and this is where opportunity is, and again, this is our sweet spot, so we're kind of riding the wave, if you will.
Well, I love the places that you find. I mean, when you go off the air after a show, I dig through them, and I'm going, God, how do these guys find this place? But it's a great deal. Are you worried at all about the PPI and CPI numbers this week? I am. I don't know. I'm probably the only one. Should I be?
I think the fact that we've been talking about inflation now again for the last few months, and it just doesn't seem to happen. You know, the certain parts of the CPI, if you look, you know, if you break it down and you look at, say, food, for example, there's, if it's ex food and energy, then you have to look at that. But I think in certain areas of the market, we're going to continue to have some inflation. And I think it may be short term. And then in some other areas of the market, when you're talking about spending on tech and all of that, I don't think there's any, we're going to continue to see productivity, technology producing productivity. We're seeing a lot of companies that are cutting costs. That's a big part of the theme that I hear when I talk to pretty much every company. So that generally doesn't lead to inflation. So there may be like different forces. Some forces are leading us to inflation and some forces are kind of keeping a lid on inflation. So I'm not concerned long term, although it is part of the cycle. And we're expecting that, just as we're expecting the yield curve to invert. We've been expecting that for a while, and it hasn't happened. So I would say no major concern at this time.
It's interesting, because I have, I have a huge concern about it, to be honest with you. And we've had two relatively hot CPIs in a row at, 0.6 and 0.65. And if we get a, you know, if we get a 1.2 one of these days, I think some people are going to say, hey, what the hell? I mean,
yeah, I agree.
And I'm not so sure we're not far away from that. We certainly are pumping up asset prices. We're trying. But they're not counted, of course.
But even still, there's, you know, again, there's going to be, you know, we're talking about housing. You're saying that, you know, we're seeing higher housing prices in certain parts of the country, but then in others, if you're, I know people who are trying to sell condos and apartments in Manhattan are not having any
good luck with that. Yeah.
Any of the cities, I think you're going to have trouble. So I think there's a balancing effect, distribution or redistribution of value, if you will. And I think that's kind of across the board. So, short term, there may be some concern, but I think longer term, you know, there's not going to be any major disruption. And I don't know whether we're in a new world, if you will, or if this is just temporary. I mean, just as it would be the same thing as saying we had a couple of days of the market being crushed, but that doesn't mean that that's like we're on a trend here now. So I'm not sure we're on a trend of higher rates or higher inflation.
Well, I think we've I dig into this, and I agree with you generally across the board someplace, but I wonder how... I wonder always about whether our government's telling us the truth or not. I wonder how for a period of really 20 years you can have healthcare being 20% of the economy and 6% of the CPI. I mean, when that is, to me, that's the gorilla in the room, and it has been for like a real long time. And
yeah, you got to look behind the numbers. I think, you know, you have to look at the components of CPI. That's what I'm saying. When you take out things that are, you know, ex food and energy, well, food is, you know, I mean, people, when you're looking at inflation for individuals, everybody buys food. And you look at the prices of especially meat in the grocery stores now, there's no question we've had inflation. But again, that effect may be temporary. And, you know, there's energy, you know, we've seen even the last few days, we've seen lower oil prices. So I'm not sure that that's going to translate into higher gas prices anytime soon. And even though CPI is measured ex food and energy, we're, you know, the components that are left, a lot of it has to do with what people are buying. And if you look at clothes, for example, I had a rare experience yesterday of going to a shopping outlet, an outlet mall, and being surprised at the number of people shopping, but being surprised at the number of sales and just how cheap you could buy a t-shirt that might have been $30 not that long ago is now $10. So it's hard to believe we're going to see price inflation on that front. Certainly hard to believe we're going to see it on the technology front. So if you get down to the components of CPI and you know, realize what the impact is going to be to the consumer, I'm not too concerned in the short run.
We'll have to talk about that someday, because it's interesting, because I look at the same stuff and sort of I am. Because I look at education, healthcare, and if you look at those particular things, we've been being lied to for a while, but nobody even counts property taxes in there.
Right. No, that's a good point. And I agree with you on education. I mean, I think there are more alternatives now, but we've seen that has crept up over the years, and the cost of higher education is astronomical. So.
Well, I mean, I love the idea that these preferreds are sneaking back. Now, why, if it's costing them more to do the preferreds, then is there a specific group that likes them other than you and me? Is it insurance companies like Preferred? I mean, who's the natural buyer of like a big chunk of preferred stock from a company like this?
Believe it or not, a lot of asset managers are buying them. They're
really okay.
A lot of investment firms are buying them. Anyone who has investments, any company that has a portion of their balance sheet and investable assets is looking at the yield. Any fixed income buyer who's looking for an alternative for yield, any individual who's looking for an alternative for yield as a way of getting yield, anyone who's looking for some stability in their account, looking for you know, what would be a more conservative investment where they can make, you know, than buying the equity. And anyone, frankly, who's willing to do their homework, because I think doing the homework is really an important part of the process.
Do you ever have people who, kind of a last question, but I could talk to you for a week, but do you ever have people who buy one of the convertible preferreds and sell covered calls above the strike, the convertible strike price?
Yeah, I mean, I have full discretion over my accounts, so I have done that in the past. Not doing that right now because there is less liquidity with the names we're buying. They're not big names, but we do have, you know, each situation is going to be different, so we could try to put some protection on the trade if we thought it made sense. But that, I wouldn't say that's necessarily what we're doing now.
Just real quick, if you have a preferred that has a strike price that you can convert into common at 60, you can sell the 65 calls and be covered, correct?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And Dan, thank you. I mean, it's a lot of fun. You do like these, both of these companies. You mention them all the time. The two are BKEPP, right? And CSSEP.
Right, and the reason I mention them again today is just to show the distinction between Blue Knight, BKEPP, which is a convertible preferred that will tend to trade more in lockstep with the common, and then CSSEP, Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment, which is not a convertible preferred. It's just a mandatory. It's a straight preferred, and that will trade more like a bond. And that there's been a divergence between the stock price of CSSE and the preferred CSSEP. So that's the distinction I wanted to make. When you look in, because you've asked a number of times about alternatives for fixed income, and something like Chicken Soup for the Soul preferred would be a perfect alternative. It's trading like a bond.
Yeah, I like the ones that are convertible because I like a little kick of. If I like the company.
I mean, the kicker is great.
Always have a little kicker. Thanks,
yeah, Dan. Yeah, absolutely.
Have a good weekend, buddy. Talk to you next week.
You
S&P futures down 675. Nasdaq futures, however, up 40. We come back, Mr. Frank Fahey.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. but I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board with Mr. Frank Fahey on the line. Talk about some stocks here. S&P futures down $2. NASDAQ futures up 60. We were down reasonably heavy. We're down 20 in S&Ps when we came in, but we've rallied back on some of that. Jobless claims actually came in higher than expected, right? Many of them by 100,000, and the continuing jobless claims are high too, so I'm not so sure where all the good news is there, but Dow futures down 78. Over in the rest of the world, we've got the DAX up 11, call that flat. FTSE down 17.3%. CAC down 7, call that flat. So nothing going on over in Europe. Nikkei down up 202, that's 0.9%. They were down yesterday. They're flipping a day behind us. Shanghai down 19.6. Hang Seng down 155.6. Yesterday is a review. Dow bounced back 439, which is roughly two-thirds of what was down the day before. S&P up 67. It's 2%. NASDAQ up 293. It's 2.7. They were down like almost 4. So it's almost your, we'll talk about this with Frank, it's almost like your exact Fibonacci replacement, like two-thirds, which is, I don't know. Fibonacci's been dead a while. I don't know what he'd say. In 10-year, I can't really speak for Fibonacci, Matty. He's been dead since what, the 1500s?
It's hard to speak for anyone that's dead.
You know what, though? Especially the right-wing people always speak for the people that wrote the Constitution, even though they're dead.
Sure. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Sorry, right-wingers. I'm in the middle. I can insult both sides because it's lonely in the middle.
It's very easy to insult both sides.
Yes.
They make it very easy.
Yes. A 10-year, 0.71. So that's snuck back up since even the last time we did the report. The Bund, minus 0.43. Japan, positive 0.026. Oil, again, it's a horrible week for oil. Down another 44 cents, 37.61. Brent down 33 cents, 40.46. Looking at some of these individual stocks, I mean, Schlumberger is 1842. I mean, that was a 75-hour stock like forever, and now they just absolutely cannot get out of their own way. Natural gas, 236. Arbob, 111. See, gas price is sneaking down because Arbob's down 16 cents in the last week or two. Gold, up $7, 1961. Silver, up 27 cents, 27.35. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, and sports.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're still pretty open on the expressways. We have some delays on the inbound Kennedy, but no accidents or issues to report. Eden's looking good. Eisenhower, a couple of slowdowns too, just seeing some red on there. So traffic volumes are a little higher than they've been the last couple of weeks, and that's good, but no accidents or delays to speak of that are significant. Stevenson looks good. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Lakeshore Drive is quiet as well. Suburban tollways, no issues to report. In fact, we don't have any accidents anywhere on the screen, not even on the side streets. So enjoy a nice quiet commute if you're heading in this morning. Weather today, another dark and dreary day as it's been the last 3 days now here in Chicago. Sunshine's coming tomorrow, don't worry. But we have some rain in the forecast and a high of 64, which is where we're at right now. Cloudy, dry, and 64, going up to a drizzly high of 64. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 93 today. Right now it's clear and 69. In sports, White Sox with a blowout win in Pittsburgh last night, beating the Pirates 8-1. Cubs were shut out in a pitcher's duel versus the Reds 3-0 at Wrigley. Trevor Bauer and Yu Darvish both now have ERAs under 1.8 as they compete for the Cy Young with a couple of other great starters. But Bauer got the best of Darvish last night. Cubs are still 2.5 up on the Cardinals. Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 6-4. Chief.
If the Cardinals win the division, tell me the guy isn't a lock for manager of the year.
He would deserve it. He won it last year. They don't usually like to give it to the same guy twice in a row, but they definitely could.
We don't want to give stock picker of the year or market picker of the year to Frank 2 years in a row?
No.
Mr. Frank Fahey, how are you, bud?
Neither a leader nor a follower be.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're not, what I say, if you're not the lead dog in the pack, the view never changes.
My most recent stock call was incredibly bad. The one where Tesla was at 500, I wrote on a piece of paper, and I said 1,000 before 450. And the lowest I saw it at was 325. I did that last Wednesday.
Wow.
Before the split. So I'm a moron.
You and I were talking on the phone, and we actually mentioned on the show, and I don't usually give, what I do is I use option prices not as a to get somebody to buy them or sell them. I use them as just a way to give everybody a clue as to what the rest of the world thinks the risk is in their stock. It's sort of like how many people, Frank, did you know that probably could easily have afforded a Corvette, let's say, and all they do is and they call their insurance guy and they go, Mr. Weber, that's like $2,000 a year. And you go, wait a minute, every time I go, do I got to chain this thing to the curb? If it's that risky to own one, I don't want one, right? And so sometimes the price of the option gives you a risk assessment of what the rest of the market thinks of the price of the stock, right? Or the volatility of the stock more than the price. And I, when Tesla, where was it, 2300 or something before split? And the January 300, not 1300, not 2300, but plain 300 puts, and that's 5 months away, $3.50, Frank. And I'm sitting there going, somebody thinks this stock's too high, right? I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that before. I mean, in a stock that was, well, you don't see too many stocks over $2,000. But, you know, it would be the equivalent if the, if the stock was like, $230 and the $30 puts were highly bid. Me wonder why. Well, does somebody think these guys are on a business or what? We're not talking about a 10% decline there, are we? I mean, I can't believe they were that high. But now, I'm sure the guy made money. I mean, they're gonna be higher now, but after the split and everything, they would be what? They'd be the $60 puts, right? Have to be. So. But I mean, sometimes when you look at the prices of this stuff, even Apple and some of these other places, and Apple's not all that volatile, you look at some of these prices on the insurance and you go, man, if this stock is thought to the world to be this, because I've been doing some earnings plays this week, Frank, and some of these stocks, was a couple of the ones yesterday, they were, the straddles are like $40 and $50. I mean, these stocks are, I'm not saying they're too high, but let's just say there's a difference of opinion on where they ought to be, right? For those prices to be like that, I mean, and I don't know what that says. I don't know if I could buy a stock at 200 and not protect it. And if I found out like the 150 puts was like $20 or something, I'd say, God, somebody thinks this is too high. And I would liable just, you know, say their opinion's worth something. Sort of like the vet thing. So what, did you happen to listen to any of Dan? Are you there? Do we still have Frank?
I was wondering why Frank was so quiet. All of a sudden he's gone.
He's gone. Well, then he's real quiet.
Well, we'll see if we can get him back on.
We'll see if we can get him back in. Manny, what do you think? I mean, as somebody who's, kind of listening to me go down this road, I'm really having a real hard time wondering with the COVID and the places I see, the differences in the financing and the difference in the other stuff. I'm having a real hard time thinking that maybe some of this, Russell versus, QQQ might be permanent. Hey, Frank, if you're listening at all to the Dan interview?
Yeah, I did. My mom traded nothing but preferred stocks and convertible bonds.
I imagine she did pretty well.
She did. She kept herself going. You know, my dad died in 75. She kept herself going another 40 years.
Well, what is your view? Dan and I, it's interesting. He has such a different skill set. And I'm jealous of it, to be honest with you, because he seems to be able to find stuff where there isn't stuff. But he thinks that the Fed, he looks at liquidity in areas that, you know, whenever there's a problem, necessarily don't have liquidity, like in these bonds that are trading for these smaller companies and so forth. And he claims that the liquidity is there. You can actually trade them, and you can buy them and sell them, and their spreads aren't too wide. You know, and that's one thing. We were kind of having not a debate. But I'm wondering, Frank, as I continue, I mean, today I have people that want me to put money to work for them. I'm struggling between where the hell do I put it? I mean, I'm not talking about individual stock. I'm talking about indexes. Obviously, the Russell's been the poor performer. The XLE, mm-hmm. We don't even want to go there in the XLE. But by the same token, sometimes when things get down that low, it's time to buy. The Qs are getting a little wobbly here. Probably if somebody gave me $1 billion, I'd probably today, for the first time in a while, I might stick with the S&P, you know, if that was my choice. But I'm wondering, Frank, because of the difference in the financing rates, we don't seem to have any kind of antitrust issues, is this separation between the Qs and the Russell? Every single client I talk to and everybody on the radio is convinced that, you know, when we quote come back, small cap will come back. I'm starting to wonder, Frank, if there isn't a permanent wound in small cap, and it's just not going to come back. It's going to be a laggard for a long time vis-a-vis. I'm not talking maybe the Qs might come down because it's too high, but vis-a-vis the S&P or the bigger companies. The advantages are too great here.
How many of these small caps won't meet the requirements to be listed?
Well,
that's part of my concern.
Too. Yeah, that too.
What's the effect of this going to be?
Well, yeah, that's right. And I you look if we had, what was the name of the outfit that Johnson & Johnson just bought? Those guys, from what I hear, my elves tell me that Johnson & Johnson is one of the leaders now in the vaccine thing, they and AstraZeneca. Now, whether that's true or not, who the hell knows?
And it's amazing how you get that the elf tells you and AstraZeneca announces a problem.
Well, from what I gather, from my elves tell me, is that AstraZeneca, the reason why they're ahead of everybody else is because they evidently did some work on SARS. And they did some work on a couple of other COVID-type viruses, and we're a little ahead of the pack starting out. And they've maintained a little bit of a lead because they were already somewhere down the trail. From what
they probably had some of the professionals left over from when they did that work,
right? And I guess I'm saying that in Johnson & Johnson, a lot of people think they plucked the berry in this firm they just bought that I can't remember the name of. They paid $1 billion for some firm out of the blue, Frank. So there must have been something there. So let's just say the current chalk, the guy selling you the tout sheet at the racetrack. The current tout is that AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson are the leaders. Now, a month ago, it was that other one, Viramax or something Max, that everybody liked because they they had gone already to the nursing homes, and they found that whatever the dosage that they needed to create antibodies was less than they thought, so they were very happy with the fact that there would be hardly any side effects. So, I mean, they were leading the pack for a while in terms of people's opinion. Now, this will probably go back and forth till we get one of these. But they're all actually making
them. We only have to wait about a month to find out which one it is.
Well, and we're already
producing.
That's
what our fearless leader says.
Well, you know, they're already producing them, Frank, right?
It's right. He said available.
Yeah. The question is, are they going to make people take it? If you take the vaccine, does that mean you don't have to wear your mask running in the health club, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard? Whatever. I mean,
run outside. Jeez, you don't need to run in a health club. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of.
Well, that's where you have treadmills, you got bikes, you got weights. You know, it's right next door. You know.
Okay.
Just so, well, you don't go slow.
All I know is I helped my son move. I'm darn near 70, and I had a mask, and I was going up and down four flights of steps, and I did it.
Okay, well, it's, you know, but who knows? You might, maybe your oxygen level is down to zero when you were doing it. You might have lost all kinds
of... That's right. I am part of the undead.
Yeah, you could be. So, right, let me ask you, if somebody shoved a million at you today and said, you know, put it to work, where would you put it? I'm struggling with that today, to be honest with you.
I found the convertible and preferred, convertible preferred and the convertible bonds story compelling. But one thing Dan didn't tell us is what percentage of a portfolio do you put into that? So would I put in, you know, 40,000 into that? The fact that it's a 10%, 12% rate of return tells me, we've seen stocks like that lately in the oil patch side.
Well, that's what my fear is, Frank. And with the government at all levels, it seems like just by accident, these guys will make some kind of a rule that all of a sudden your business is out of business. You don't even know why. I mean, Lou's talking about it in California. I mean, some people that were in the power industry all of a sudden. Now we don't want that kind of power anymore, and 2 years later they got blackouts. I mean, it seems like people's businesses are really getting affected by, really under any walk of life, by the...
A cabal of evil men, as Jane Byrne once called them.
She said evil. The
yes.
People she was talking about were, I'm going to say, they were bright and competent, but evil. Now I don't think people are competent. I don't think they know what they're doing. They make decisions and really can't follow it. That was a thing that the University of Chicago, you know, just beat into you, Frank. I mean, especially in the economics school, and to a certain extent the business school. I ended up taking almost as many classes in economics as I did in business. They absolutely beat into you. If you said, I'm going to, take one pedal off Frank's bike. If you couldn't write down on a piece of paper very detailed of what that's liable to cause, short term, long term, what difference it's going to make in Frank's life, his speed of biking, if you couldn't follow through on what you just did, it was a D paper, a C paper. And I think guys make decisions now and they just kind of hope for the best and don't monitor them at all. Or am I just wrong?
Oh, I think you're right. The Ouija boards is out. Or their self-interest. So, for example, I don't trust anything that comes out about public housing from this administration because Jared Kushner's family is one of the largest, you know, landlords of public housing in the country or subsidized. So I'll immediately discount it. And it's like everybody's like that.
Well, I can't. The idea of... people in nursing homes can't even leave their room when Jay Pritzker's family is a huge owner of nursing homes. I'm appalled by that, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know how
that's an unintended consequence. You probably can't get out of a nursing home. People can't get in nursing homes. It's a current problem. I have three or four family members that are wrestling with. Mom or dad can't be at home anymore, but there's nowhere you can send them.
Well, Audrey is a friend who went into an assisted living place. She just don't find her own place, but she just said, you know, there's nobody around her. Nobody comes over. I might as well, what am I doing in this condo? I can go in one of these nice, get her own apartment in an assisted living place. She was in like 2 weeks before the COVID. So now she's supposed to be banned in her room. But she's a feisty old babe, I'll say that for her. She's funny as hell. But, so twice a day she walks by the desk and says, I've been in jails better than this, and guess what, the food was better. She says to her. But I mean, and she's found a friend where they sneak out the back door and there's a couple of chairs out in back that nobody looks at, and they spend an hour outside every day before they figure they're going to get caught and hustle back in.
Well,
you know, I mean,
well, having worked in factories, I know what those chairs are for. Smoking a cigarette.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you wonder, but some of the, I did see that the guy in New York relented there, the end of the month, he can open up the inside of the bars and restaurants for 25% instead of next June. I can't imagine what Manhattan would look like if you, but how to invest this, Frank? I can't figure out. I mean, Dan was just saying how we need more stimulus, and he didn't give any numbers, but last night I was reading, some super duper economist and stock
picker. $3 trillion.
He wants $3 trillion. Now, Frank, that's a year and a half's tax revenue for the federal government. And that's only counting that side of it. Now we have every other business wanting the money. I mean, we're out. If they did the other $3 trillion, we're talking, we've pushed out, I'm going to say we're pushing 6 years on tax revenue. Now, if you can put a date on this stuff, and St. Patrick's Day when Jay shut the place down for 15 days, if we actually had a date, I could roll with it. I could say, okay, no matter what, we're gonna declare normal, Halloween or something, and we think $3 trillion will get us there. God damn it, Frank, you have to declare normal on Halloween. Unless smallpox comes back or something.
Well, I tend not to blame Jane because he's doing the best he can with maybe 1/50th of the information he should have had.
Well, but he also...
We would have done better if there had been leadership, and I'll stick by this, and information coming from the federal government rather than ignoring it.
Well, what I'm saying, I don't disagree with that. But a lot of the information that people are making determinations on is local. I make it up to the club.
Right.
I make it up to the club.
Hey, I went to an Oaklawn pizza place yesterday, and it was 50% capacity, alternating tables.
Yeah, but I'm saying the Will County situation, where he just shut Will County's down for 2 weeks.
They deserved it.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why I thought they deserved it. I went to a Fleet Farm there. I had to get some stuff that you got to go to a farm supply store. And I was the only person wearing a mask in the whole damn place.
Were they pissed at you?
I got looks, but screw them.
Yeah, but you get
and that was early on. I shouldn't say I went the other day. It was 2 months ago.
Yeah, but
that's what happens when nobody wears masks.
All right, so my gang at the club, of which there's like two other people, whenever I get there, they run up with the latest news. And evidently, Will County had some kind of a bleep up where if you went and got yourself tested like 10 days ago and you were positive and then said, well, gee, I'm hearing about all these false positives. So 5 days later, you went back and were positive again, so you actually have the damn thing, that they're counting you as two people, that they had no system in place for saying you're the same person. How can we be that screwed up, Frank?
Because it overstrips a pandemic is outside the normal realm of understanding and experience. So somebody has to lead and say, this is how we're going to keep track of it. Weren't we told? They took it away from the CDC and gave it to somebody else to keep track of the test.
But this is
what happened.
But this is Will County. I mean
whoever's keeping track has to make sure that the numbers from the source are right. Who is in charge of the reporting system?
Well, Maddie Weber reported last week. They know somebody who's given the tests at Fulton or wherever. and they're given 700 tests a day, and only 45 people even have any kind of symptoms. So the number we're watching is the percentage of positive tests. Well, the next day, if only 550 people who aren't sick versus 650 show up, and you have the same amount of people that test positive, why should that, when you're not doing any kind of a sample or anything, why would the numerator have any bearing whatsoever to what you're doing?
That's why we have moving averages, Tom.
I guess. I mean,
And we should. And how many days do we move the averages, and do we do weighted moving averages?
Frank,
we had a guy driving a snowplow running this because it's in the summer.
He's all right. Frank, thank you. Right, SP futures up 750, NASDAQ futures up 100. We might actually have a 2-day rally here. That would be nice. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4977.